people today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I am again joined by my buddy, Brian Hooper, maybe one of my all-time favorite guests on the show. I love talking to Brian about gambling, DFS, best ball. We have a long, in-depth conversation about how profitable best ball is for the average player, and also some good DFS conversation too, before of course devolving into, you know, global geopolitics and all that stuff that Brian and I love to talk about. I hope that you guys enjoy the show. If you do like the show, you can always leave us a rating and review on iTunes. You can tell a friend about the show, or you can subscribe to patreon.com/takecast for bonus episodes of the program. Now let's go ahead and get into it. All right, everyone, welcoming Mr. Brian Hooper, Brick 75, back into the show. It's been, I don't know, what, 6-7 weeks since we did one of these. We did a couple Star Wars shows. If you guys want to listen to those, those are all very timely, or evergreen, I guess they would say. You could go back and listen to any of them if you want to go watch Obi-Wan Kenobi. And there's just lots of interesting stuff going on, and kind of just wanted to sound off on them. How are you? How are you doing? Are you getting excited for football? Do you know who plays on what team?
I'm getting closer because of best ball out now. That meant best ball is addicting. I know what you guys are talking about finally. So
yeah, it's literally like crack. Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah, it's very addicting. I mean, that's kind of what got us all into this. I would say a large portion of us is, you know, with drafting, among other things, is the fantasy football day, the day of the draft with your buddies was always fun. The rest of the season could be brutal, especially when you're like 2-10 and you have to start your lineup because it's not fair to the other guys. You know, like that can be boring, and, you know, bullshit trade offers and all that stuff. And you just get rid of all that and get just the fun day every time.
Yeah. It's a little, and you know, when you are like a degenerate, you are just doing hundreds of these. I mean, I think I'm in like 11 slow drafts right now. I'm averaging like 2 fast drafts per day. I'm actually going to have to scale up the fast drafts. I think I'm going to start doing like 3 or 4 a day. Cause I want to max out BBM, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I also would really like to max out this puppy that they're launching on August 1st, which is $1 million prize pool. But the effort required to max both BBM3, I think I'm 65 entries in right now, and to try even to get like 100 in to this new puppy is going to be my soon to be wife is not going to be very happy with my screen time, I don't think.
Me and Pete have been talking about like multi-tabling, because that's what you did in poker.
Well, that's what I do it once August starts anyways, is I'll do like 5 at a time.
That's okay. I've been doing 2, but I'm not paying attention to the off season and everything. So for me, 2 is a bit much right now, but I think that's like going to have to be a must if the growth continues on best ball and you want to like be a serious best ball player, you're going to have to multi-table 5 to 10 drafts at the same time.
You are going to have to be able to multi-table a lot. And it is easiest to do on Underdog, because multi-tabling on DraftKings is impossible the way the notifications are set up. You literally could not do it. You'd be missing picks. You wouldn't know when you were on the clock. I guess you could do, so if you really wanted to be a true sick, disgusting person, you could do 1 DraftKings on your phone, 1 DraftKings on your
desktop and have it set up that way. And multi-tabling on drafters is possible, but they don't even really have concurrent drafts going. Now they will in August, but early in July, they're just not filling them up that quickly. But Underdog, it's very doable. Weirdly enough, it's actually something that got worse. On the draft app, it was actually easier to multi-table back when Draft had it, because there was a tab at the bottom that would show all of your active drafts and how far away you were. But now what you have to do is you have to go back out to your active screen and just be like visually tracking when you're up on the clock next.
Because Drafters has that on their website.
Yes. Yeah. The top row where it shows you. Yeah.
Yeah. I like theirs. The notifications too seem off on for Underdog for me, because my phone notificates me when my pick's up on my desktop. Yes. But if I did it on my phone, I don't get a beep. I don't know if that's
I get the watch notification before I get anything else, actually, which is weird.
Even if you're drafting on your phone.
Even if I'm drafting on my phone, which I think is probably because of, I would imagine that's like a notification setting I have, like there's something there, but it comes up on my phone the fastest. But you know, the more I see people draft and the more I see other people post teams and look at other teams in my leagues, like I am still very convinced that, you know, this is something you and Pete talk about a lot on Lulz, which is like, you know, what's beatable, what's a good way to spend your money inside, you know, if you're trying to gamble and have fun. And I'm pretty convinced that I'm going to guess 60% of people are just pretty bad at best ball, to the point that, and I'm not saying they couldn't win, because it is such a variance game. Like there's so much injury. There is a lot of like, it's like a DFS slate where it's like, if you didn't have player X, you can't win. You know, if Shohei Ohtani gets 47 points on a DraftKings Major League Baseball slate, it doesn't matter how much thought you put into your lineup if you don't have him, because you don't have access to those points. Like last season, if you didn't have access to Cooper Kupp's points or Leonard Fournette's points, you could have had the best, most Mona Lisa structure and correlations ever, and it just would not have mattered. But I'm very convinced it's profitable for people who are thinking about the game right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still on the borderline there. I'm sure, listen, it's definitely skill, because you could just do like a simple thought experiment of, if you drafted all 250th ranked or worse players, you're never going to win. You're going to lose all your money. So like, clearly whoever you pick determines some of the outcome. I just don't know how much it, you can predict that's better than ADP, or use kind of some like game theory ideas to get you to where it's worth keeping your money on a site for, you know, what is it? 5 months, 6, 7 months. If you're drafting a month ago, which this is leaving aside the fact that it's entertaining. You should spend your money however you want, but like, just purely from a like professional gambler standpoint, I don't know. I would say my gut would say it's like, there's definitely edge there, but like, how long will it take you to
that's a totally different conversation. Like, is it profitable versus like, is the juice worth the squeeze versus how many lifetimes does it take you to realize it? Because again, you know, to compare it to DFS, I mean, how many slates of Major League Baseball can you play in a season?
Right.
So there, you know, there's, it's this, the regular season's like 190 days. There are a lot of times there are going to be two slates. There's a late night slate. There is showdown slates. Like if you wanted to, my guess is you could get down like 400 slates, probably something close to that. And in my lifetime, there will be like 60 best ball regular season slates, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like
baseball is like, last night was 26,000 entries, and that's a lot for baseball. Yeah. It's usually between 17 and 22. And how many are in the BBM3? Like what?
For over 400,000.
400,000, you know, like that's a large order of variance that you have to plow through before you achieve your edge.
DraftKings is offering some cool stuff. They're doing, you know, like 3,000, 4,000 person single entry ones, which I really like. Yeah. I really like the idea of, I've been drafting in some of those. That's actually, I would, I, you know, that's, not really aligning with Underdog's business model, which is like, make it bigger, as much customer acquisition as possible, as much marketing as possible. A $15 single entry tournament is not nearly as marketable as $2 million first place, $10 million prize pool. So, you know, I don't know if that's going to be something they plan on adding to their menu, but that is something that would obviously make it more palatable to the grinders.
The less flat, the playout structure too, also increases the variance. So like, let me give you an example. So like the slate last night in MLB, 26,000 some players, I took second, right? And then you guess who beat me? Fucking Ricky D.
I was going to say, it's gotta be like Whistles Go Woo, Awesomeo, or Ricky D.
So I DM'd him. And I said, don't you know, they should make the payout structures flatter, don't you think? You know, just joking, because he got 100 and I got 30. Mm-hmm. And that's bad, but it can even be worse than that. And of course he disagreed with me, but.
Well, the first to second jump is not the one where you are feeling max pain a lot of the time. It's like first to sixth. Sixth is like the max pain in a lot of these tournaments.
It's all bad. I'm telling you, it's all pain. Like,
well, I just have, I got sixth twice last season in the $50 single entry, which is like the difference of realizing a $200,000 season versus like, realizing like a $9,000 season.
I'm well aware. And, but to finish the story. So he told me, he goes, you know, the truth is I almost unregged right before lock. He's like, I was really busy and I just put in like this, you know, not my full process worth of lineups. So he goes, you should have definitely won that. Sorry. It's like, so like, wow. Anyway, so the reason I bring that up is because like, there's so much variance in, you know, a 20,000 man MLB GPP. Think about it, for a season long, you know, draft, you can't pick whoever you want. It's draft format that you get, you know, one shot every year. Or two, you know, if you do the puppy two or something, you know, like it easily, you could be the best player and easily never win. Easily, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we'll never really know who the best.
In a lifetime.
Yeah, we'll never, I don't think we'll ever really know who the best. I mean, maybe if there was like, so maybe they do something in the future where instead of running, I mean, there'll always be a Best Ball Mania probably, but maybe they do a $50 tournament, a $20 tournament, a $10 tournament, a $5 tournament, and they like run all these concurrently. And, you know, maybe FanDuel launches a product eventually. And, you know, maybe there are like five competing best, you know, maybe ESPN launches one, maybe Yahoo has the functionality to do it, but the prize pools are just no good. But like, I don't know, you know, I see a future like 3 or 4 years from now. And I don't know if you'd ever make a living as a best ball player, you'd have to just be like a fantasy player, like a gambler. But I could see a future where best ball becomes like super, super mainstream in that way.
So I'm going to go the opposite way on that. I think you will see full-time best ballers this year because the popularity is growing, but you could grind the three mans, the Sundays.
Oh yeah. I'm not, you totally could. I have zero interest. Yeah, there actually is a guy. I don't know his story. I've not listened to. He's James Brincombe. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've drafted with him. It's like at Eagles with three Z's.
Yes,
and he grinds NHL playoff best ball. PGA. You know, three man, six man, you know, et cetera, all this stuff. So I could see, and basically he's got it set up to just basically like auto profit, like basically. You know, taking people's biases against them and basically just drafting as the market would, but which I think is probably the right way to do it if you're going to be getting that much action. I know CSU used to grind the three mans and the six mans. I just have no interest because I don't play fantasy sports professionally and I am looking for life-changing money and that's really my only interest.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you. I'm saying there is or will be some or more increasing amount of guys who do it for a living because of the popularity. You could still, and it's just, there's less sharks there right now. So if
totally, you're,
and you could develop tools, and I've talked about it and with some people about like kind of implementing some sort of smart auto drafter. I'm sure it's going to come eventually. it depends on how good it is, whether it matters.
Yeah, I talked about this with Bime for a couple weeks ago on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Pod. So like I totally think it's coming. And I'm as you are a very data centered guy, my supposition was that we are, I think it would be hard to do it so well because of the amount of inputs that you're having to do. Cause obviously any model is only going to be as good as the data you give it. And I was telling this to Liam too, actually. And Liam's like, every game I've played in my life, chess, you know, all these games, right? The computers always eventually got to the point to where they could beat or at least compete with humans, right? And my thing is like, yeah, absolutely. But that's even chess is like a totally limited number of variables compared to a 17-week NFL season.
Sure. My hope is that like the powers that be at Underdog, DraftKings and everything have your mind frame so they don't ban my stuff. Because I think you could definitely get a strong edge just through a good
auto data, drafting
auto draft with some like GTO principles and correlation and shit like that.
Well, I think I could set up a computer to draft how I want it to draft, right? So it's like when you take Travis Kelce, you bump all Chiefs players 15%, all Broncos players 10%. Mm-hmm. Like that's a way to do it, but just doing it through machine learning and projections. Like if you're correlating the computer to draft based off what it thinks is best versus human preferences, I think are two different things.
Sure. Yeah. You could just use that machine learning and data research to program your auto drafter. And so instead of using Davis's ballpark 15% bump, using your analogy, you give a more accurate bump.
Sure.
Maybe each player is differently has a different bump, et cetera, et cetera. Like there's just a whole bunch of different ways you could do it. Like thinking ahead, if I was them, I wouldn't ban it because like, you're probably going to get a lot of interest. It might suck. Like you
totally
said, might suck. And you're going to get a lot of interest of guys who don't want to sit around for, you know, 300 hours drafting but they will like auto draft half their draft or something. So like you could, you know, pick your first four or five rounds and then you're like, who the hell is this guy or something, you know, and you're like, I'm just going to auto draft here. I know it's going to fill out the rest of this team in a decent manner. And that's good enough for me. I only want to spend 20 minutes on it and like shit like that. If the popularity increases, or it's already there really, but like in other sports matters too, because like that, the Eagles guy you mentioned, like I was doing PGA best ball because I on my app I usually throw in like so I you know I rank them based on odds essentially and put cut percentages and stuff and overlay it on the site.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I bet no one's doing this, you know what I mean? Like they're not even doing this much level of research on these best balls. Like this has to be make money, which is why I was mentioned earlier about there's going to be pros, because just doing that simple thing, you're probably ahead of like 95% of the field.
Yes. I know, Dink and Leone were doing some of that with the golf stuff, you know, just very simple, just having like a ranking system and auto drafting, which is like, so any sport where the correlations don't matter, I think you could just do that right now. You could just import, you know, good rankings based off of odds or, you know, some sort of ELO system or just whatever it is mm-hmm. that you are doing to rank these players. But I mean, how many sports don't have correlations that matter? And like, will the prize pools ever be big enough for people to really care that much?
And even the PGA has correlations when the weather gets a little squirrely, right?
But the correlations wouldn't matter over all the majors, which is what the big tournament was, right? That you wouldn't, there would be no correlation over four major championships.
Well, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm talking day of obviously, but yeah. And also like they usually do just one day. So it's not all 4 days of golf. So one day that weather correlation can be huge, but either way, you're right. Like there is no correlation, you could easily just rank your guys in auto draft. That's what I did. It shouldn't really matter that much. I would, though, one caveat there though, is I would check in. Let's say you're going to enter, you know, whatever, 50 times. I would check in after like 15 and then adjust my rankings based on my portfolio, because you still, I think, want to get some diversification there. Like, you know, you don't want 100% of a guy who has like 1.2% chance of winning, you know what I mean? Like, even though that's pretty good for golf, like, you know, you're probably not, it's probably,
well,
not
that's a lesson people just have to learn the hard way themselves. Like when they start to use computer software to do anything in DFS or gambling, which is that very small edges get pressed to the nth degree. So like the first time you load up an optimizer for NFL DFS and, you know, Najee Harris is projected for 0.6 points more than Dalvin Cook, and you don't have any sort of randomization or anything like that, you are going to get flooded with Najee Harris, right? And that it's way worse with like the min price tight end on DraftKings. Like Ricky Seals-Jones is the starting tight end for whatever team for a week. You're getting like 100% of him in 150 your first run. And then, you know, obviously really like
baseball.
Yeah.
You get 100% Otani or 100% of the 2000 priced.
Yeah. The Jorge Mateo is batting eighth for the Orioles, and yeah, just whatever it is. And
right.
You know, those are problems that like, I mean, I would know how to fix that. Right. So like, I'm going to go run 150 in baseball. I know how to fix that. I know how to deal with that. And then, but I wouldn't really know how to start to adjust that with, if I was setting up software to run in best ball, right? Like it would be like, well, you know, I don't want to change my ranking. I don't want to move Gabriel Davis behind Deontay Johnson in my, you'd have to build some sort of randomizer type thing. No,
there's all right. I don't want to talk about some of this stuff, but because there's people listening, but there is already statistical code out there that you can get for free that measures a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. Don't ruin my best ball, dude. don't ruin these streets for me. I don't want this to be the last fun year of best ball, right? Because it's so much fun right now. People are drafting horrible teams. Like they think their structure is good. They don't really get what they're trying to do. Like I don't want, because DFS is not really fun anymore. I mean, I play super casually outside of football season. I play much more seriously for football, mostly because it's just not fun anymore. Like if I was going to deposit $10K for NBA, I could probably grind out in, you know, $5 to $25 cash games. I could probably grind out some sort of profit, but it would not be fun for me at all. It would just not be fun at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. Like I've very rarely like manually hand build a lineup when for some reason, like if I'm on vacation or something, which doesn't happen very often.
And you got to get the crowns. Imagine,
I'm like, I don't give a fuck about the crowns. I got millions of them I don't use, but I just fucking, I just want, you know, a sweat or something to watch in the game. I'm like, hey, I'm a professional DFS player. I could do this. And I just make a lineup that just takes dead last, you know? And so I feel you. But like, I would say MMA is a little different. MMA is a great underrated DFS sport. Like you could watch the fights and you look at your you know, who did I take? Okay, I need this guy to punch the shit out of that guy. You know what I mean? Or this girl to choke that girl out. And it's a fantastic DFS, fantastic sweat. It's probably better than sports betting even. But sports betting MMA is fun too. Like at the sportsbook, let me tell you, so when I was in Vegas a couple weeks ago, like I went to like three or four different sportsbooks, and these guys were watching the Mets game or the Red Sox, some fucking super popular, who cares, baseball team.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, God, this is so boring that they bet on it. Like I could, cause they, it was pissing me off because the MMA fights were on, but they wouldn't put them on the big screen, which had the sound, right? And it's like that, how can they, and then as soon as the game was over, they left, but they didn't put MMA on. And it's just like, it's just an inferior betting product all around, DFS, sports betting, baseball, like even football, like it's kind of close to it with Red Zone now. DFS Red Zone is a great combo too.
Yeah. I mean, I do most of my, it's actually funny because the whole bit was that I was not the hand builder, which is like, I've really changed how I've played. NFL DFS, I used to be, I mean, like 2019 to mid 2020, I was a big optimizer bro. I was 150ing. I was doing all this stuff, and it just got, well, one, I went on like a huge downswing. You know, like if you don't win in a season of NFL, if you have no win, you're going to burn through. I mean, I don't know how much I actually lost, easily five figs of just burning money. And also it got to the point where, like, because with football, I really like football, right? Like, I really like, you know, like, oh, this wide receiver is in a good spot. Like, the projections don't love him, whatever. Like, baseball, it was very easy for me to just be like, a computer says this, right? So, like, I'm gonna do that. It just wasn't it, like, doing the opto bro stuff, is especially if you're not doing it professionally, like treating it as a professional when it's just like a side gig, was just, it just wasn't fun. And the games are so hard, and it's so hard to get, because, like, obviously I'm not a computer programmer. I'm using publicly available, like, paywalled simulations and stuff, which means at best either it's not the best in the world, or other people are using the same simulations as me to create lineups, which is like its own confounding thing. And it just, I fell out of love with being an opto bro. I'm a hand builder now.
I mean, I went from the same thing, but instead of opto bro, I went to my own, you know, full in-house statistical
Sims. Yeah,
Sims. And one of the reasons is, you know, when you were an opto bro back then, that was an edge. Like, people weren't even opto broing. Like, they didn't even know how to.
Yeah. When I first started opto broing for NBA, I remember it was the first year I worked at Daily Roto, and I won the $1 mini max in NBA like five times. Cause it was just like, oh yeah, cause no one was doing it. People just weren't doing it. And now I would bet any tournament that is run on DraftKings or FanDuel that's like over 10,000 entries is like over 50% opto-bros probably.
Yeah. It depends. I look at that stuff. I haven't looked in a while.
Pete always tells me I overrate that. Pete always tells me that he's said this to me before, that you and I, you know, overrate how many people are playing seriously, thinking seriously, mm-hmm. using these tools seriously.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely overrated it. We had a show, like, it was a while ago now at this point. I thought a lot of guys were doing the same thing I am, and it turns out there's probably not that many. But opto bros, there are, like, there's Fantasy Cruncher wouldn't exist, right, if there wasn't a lot of people paying those subs. So, yes. Like, clearly people are paying, you know, all these sites really have optimizers now. But my point is kind of like, you, that was your edge, but then you stopped. So, like,
and I wasn't working on getting better either, right? So, like, I did basically, I had like my same like shuffle and randomizer settings for a while, kind of had my same, and I was never like really seriously studying, like, oh, is a 5-man stack better than a 4-4? Yeah. I was just like, this is what I think is right, and I'm not changing my mind about it. Like, I wasn't consistently improving.
Exactly. Like, this is kind of, I've talked about, like, the way people use leverage is kind of annoying to me, because it's like, you're just describing that you have more players than the field. Like, leverage implies I have an edge. Like, if I'm wrestling you, I'm on top or something, and I have leverage on you because my weight and whatever position.
Well, I don't really think they're using it wrong. They're just using it like suppositionally, right? Like, I propose that my leverage is that I think the Angels are in a better spot than the field is, right? Which they're using it fine. You're being a pedant.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, it is subjective slightly, because even the process I use, like, is slightly subjective. Because,
yeah, it's,
like,
I mean, some of the things we're proposing are unknowable.
But, like, this is what I told Alex Baker. Like, he said the same thing to me on one of his streams. And I'm like, I'm using the scientific method. You know what I mean? Like, you're going, like, my bones are aching because the weather's coming, right? And I'm going, like, no, here's why we think the weather will come. And then you call it the same thing. And it's like, it's not the same thing.
I definitely play DFS now, like, my bones are aching guy.
Right, but that, like, my, and you're right, it's pointless for me to even bring up, which is why I was going to do a video on it, and I'm like, this is dumb. Like, I stopped doing videos anyways, but I'm like, it's kind of like the GTO thing too, that, like, Nerdy Tenor talks about. Like, you know, like we could say, like, I like to do my, you know, I just GTO the shit out of my laundry, you know what I mean? That's not what GTO means, right? Like, in you know, the poker sense is, like, you're playing unexploitably, right? Like, and that's not how people use it. They you actually use it as an exploit of you know, playing exploitively. It's like the GTO way is to play Ohtani because he's only 1% owned today and these donkeys aren't playing him enough. So the GTO way would be playing 50%, but like, that's not what GTO means. And it's the same thing with leverage, but really I wasn't even trying to talk about that. I was just trying to say, like, before when you threw it in an optimizer, that was your edge. And then now when you look at it, that edge is gone and you see Ohtani is, I keep using him. I know you like him, but like, Ohtani's owned at 25%. How the hell do you know that that's good or bad? Right. And most people just go, oh, 25% is pretty high.
It's yeah. Like, too okay, high.
Why? Why do you, why? How could too you high. Prove this? Right. Cause your bones are fucking aching. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, you're just totally making it up. Now, here's my strategy. I give out like the two strategies I think guys like you or just whatever, basically anyone who's not doing a full professional process is one, you pick, you do kind of like the Pat Curran, I call it like method, like Leone and those guys, or you do a large field contrarian entry. So like the large field one, enter like two, four lineups. Like if you feel, you know, like you want to gamble 20, whatever you want, and they should be very different from each other
interesting.
They should be very different from each other and hopefully in a negatively correlated way. And then with those,
yeah, that's just like off the top of my head. What I would do is if I was playing like the, what's normally $15 on DraftKings, is I would do four versions of the same five man stack or same team with different one-offs and maybe like a different starting pitcher. Or
yeah.
Two.
I would definitely recommend against that.
Okay.
And then, you know, and then like Big T Binks, like the next golf week with first, third, fourth, and fifth. And then
he's the Big T. Imagine how easy life would be if you could just pick winners like Big T.
I know, I can't pick winners. And he won't give me a run pure sub. You know, I figured my influence level would get me there, but no, so I can't get any of the winners anyways. But like, and listen, by the way, play however you want. I'm not like, I'm not like telling someone how to play
whoever you want.
Not that, but like, you know, like I don't, if you disagree with me, that's fine. I'm not trying to persuade anyone here. And so you get different, preferably in a negatively correlated way, and only enter like two or four, something like that. Even in the 150, I think it's totally reasonable. And then those lineups also should be at least like moderately contrarian. And if it's a dupey sport, try your best to get like between one and five dupes, and that'll just come with experience if you're doing this by hand. But you could do it by hand and guess like, ah, yeah, this will probably be like two or three, and then just like, you know, pray to the DF gods, make a sacrifice to them if you have to, and then just know that you're probably not going to win the vast majority of the time, but that'll probably be your best like strategy of like banking that 100K, which is what everyone wants to do. Now, the other one, which people don't want to do, is if I was you specifically, or someone like you who knows a lot and this is their life, like sports, is I would play small field, single entry, maybe yeah, three.
That's what I do. I play, there's like generally there on DraftKings, there's a $44 single entry baseball tournament that's like, depending on the day, between 300 and 600 people. Yeah. And I just enter like the fourth highest team total, five man stack in that. It's pretty much the logic there.
Okay. Well,
normally the Blue Jays, this is fucking Blue Jays scored 28 runs or 27 runs the other day. And I was like, do you know how many times this season I five man stacked the Blue Jays and they scored like two runs against, I mean, it's like, it was one of the most annoyed I've ever been checking baseball scores.
The Martingale FOMO in DFS is real. It's strong. You know, when your guy fucks up, like, it's like, then now it's going to happen. Now I'm going to get the
so home run. Obnoxious.
What was I saying? Oh yeah. So do small field. And then here's what the sim says, the smaller the field, the less correlation you need.
Yes. Okay.
So you always want to keep
people, people hate that. People, you often hear this, that actually you should giga correlate because you only need like an 80th percentile outcome if you're beating 300 people.
What was that called? Onslaught stacks or something?
Onslaught,
like,
yeah.
Well, like, I don't think it's the end of the world, but like, I'm just saying what the Sims generally do.
Yeah, just play the best plays. And
I mean,
and
you print. Do want some correlation. If you're playing against 300, 500 opponents, you probably still should. Like, but I'm talking even smaller than that. And then you kind of micro, it's kind of like, you know, micromanage their strategy. So like, you got a late swap, you got to, like, especially, you know, if you're playing this 10 man, 12 man, 20 man fields, like, you know, and you're playing $44 or higher per entry, like, know who your opponents are, you know, try to game select. And just like back in the poker days, and then you can guess what they're going to play more likely, because they're popular players. They play every time. You could, like, learn their strategy.
Well, ownership. So, like, ownership really can, that is one thing I've noticed, is like the smaller the field, the more ownership condenses. So, like, if Shohei Ohtani is projected for 17% ownership as an outfielder in, you know, the Millie Maker or whatever, which is normally what people optimize their stuff for, is the biggest field, he'll be like 35% in the single entry stuff.
Right. And so it's like good chalk, bad chalk. So, like, the good chalk is just going to be higher owned in the higher stakes and the lower amount of opponents. And the bad chalk will be lower owned in the higher stakes too. So you have to differentiate from there. But like, the reason I say it is, like, well, this is what you know, Davis, like, gambler out there, this is what you love. Like, you love, like, figuring out who's the best plays and what's going on in there.
Yeah. Know, like, I like games. You know, I asked this on Twitter a couple weeks ago, like, what do you like more about fantasy football? Like, figuring out the game aspects of it, like, you know, the correlations, and like Taysom Hill is tight end eligible, but he might get some quarterback snaps. Or do you just like figuring out who is going to score the most points? And I think I like the game aspect more, but I don't like the game aspect as much as you do, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't want to make decisions. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? I don't want to pick.
Yeah.
I don't want to pick, like, no, this guy's definitely over there. I don't want hot takes. I don't want any of that stuff in my process. But I think I'm an outlier. I think most people
are a medium between me and, like, really average guy who's just picking guys he can think do well. Like, I, you know, obviously a huge difference is, and probably for lots of people listening to this too, is you have access to lots of really good tools. Like, you have access to really good projections, really good ownership projections. Probably at least one site you subscribe to does simulations. So, like, you can sort of internalize all of that throughout the course of the week. Like, you can for NFL specifically, you can be like, oh, you know, Kyler Rondale Moore is going to be really popular this week, but I don't think, like, and just like totally conjecture, be like, I don't think they're in such an insane spot that they should be, you know, 10% of the pool has Kyler and Rondale or whatever. So I'm not going to play those guys, and I'm going to play DeAndre Hopkins and a different quarterback instead, or something like that. And that's how I prefer to play. Like, it's just like, I take some of the data science, I take some of the hot takes. And if I was playing for a living though, like if I quit my job and was like, you know, I'm going to sell all my Bitcoin and just go all in on being a professional DFS player, I would do it the way you do it, 100%.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to, especially if you want to last for a while. And like I said too, like, I'm not trying to persuade anyone either way. I'm just like giving my general observations on what I think I would do. Those kind of are the two strategies. And then you know, like Davis just said, think about what you how your personality. So like, if you're someone who just wants the 100K and you're okay with losing 90% of the time or something like that with your 2-4 entries, do the second strategy too. But if you that will tear you up and you got to have some wins, even if they're small, then do the micro field strategy. Like, that's kind of the two. And you could, like, control a lot more in those micro fields, like, because you know your opponents. There's only 12 guys. There's not as many combos to beat. All sorts of things like that. But, like, your ROI will definitely be significantly lower in those.
I don't really care about losing. Like a month ago, I finally snapped out of it. But I was on, like, a good no bink since like February type run or something, where I was just bleeding money, which feels kind of bad, because a lot of the stuff I play in is theoretically you should realize your EV more often, like women's soccer. I should be realizing my EV, like, I should have won one of the main GPPs in women's soccer already, and I haven't yet, which, like, feels bad to not be realizing that EV. But even taking first for like 2K or whatever in one of these is, like, that's enough to keep me going mentally for like another month or 2 months or whatever. Like it's totally fine. But it's the real barren periods where I'm like, this is just fucking boring. I just hate this. This sucks.
Yeah, I just realized, I think this is the most gambling we've ever talked on a take.
Yeah.
By a long shot. We usually last about 5 minutes.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten into
people are gonna think this is normal. This is our normal discourse.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about like eating crickets or anything yet.
Oh my god, that is getting out of hand.
It's really picking up. The cricket and bug propaganda is really picking up. I wonder if they know something we don't know about supply chain type stuff.
Do you know that like Alex Jones meme where it's like Alex Jones is always right or something like that? And then it's got like his predictions and stuff like that. I don't know if you saw that one. And it's like, well, first of all, like what's his batting average here? How many swings is this guy taking? I don't know. I don't watch him. I'm sure it's insane amount of swings and misses there. But like it does feel like we're living in Alex Jones. I used to do the bug joke. Years ago, because it's funny, you know what I mean? Like, no, you're gonna eat bugs, Davis. And then like me and you keep sending back and forth in our DMs.
It was the Snowden tweet. The Snowden tweet really got to me, where he was like, people keep saying they're not gonna eat the bugs. You're gonna eat the fucking bugs. And you know what? I just like, I honestly, I should just make peace with it now. Oh. Because we're gonna eat the bugs, dude. It is gonna be unavoidable, I think, probably.
I think I don't want to agree with that, so I won't, but just on pure stubbornness, because like I told you in the DMs, I'm like, it's going to be like 5% ethanol in your gas. It'll be like, oh, I just ate a hamburger. And then some like, oh, you know, that's 5% cricket. And like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. And they've already, soft launched that with like the Beyond Burgers and the Impossible Burger and all that stuff, which is honestly, I would rather eat a burger made of bugs than an Impossible Burger, which is just soy, really.
Yeah, and oil compounds and stuff. Well, I mean, they have which I thought was supposed to be ready by now. What is the other the factory grown meat? Why am I blanking on the name of those companies? But they grow the meat in a petri dish, essentially. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know the name of the company, but I've seen that.
So like it is actually real meat, it's just with ethical, so there's no animals being held in factory farms and stuff like
that. You would think, because of my history as a bleeding heart lib, that I would be all about the ethical treatment of animal, and I'm of course like the meat packing plants and everything is, I mean, it's fucking horrible, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Read The Jungle, buddy. Read your socialist propaganda.
Forced to read that in high school.
Well, good. It's incredible that in this day and age that kids are still reading The Jungle, because it is such clearly
propaganda. It's communist propaganda. That's
good. It's good, and I'm glad kids are. I'm glad kids are reading it. And said, what was the book that Timothy McVeigh read? It's like the handbook to how to be a white nationalist, but it's like a. It's a narrative, but I forget the name. I'm surprised like that's not what kids are being forced to read these days.
Yeah, I can't remember his, but he wrote one, like an anarchist book or something like that. I can't remember the title, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah. So I think it's ridiculous that I had to read The Jungle. Like, it did have an effect on me at the time. And then like, now that I'm older and research it, like Upton Sinclair was
the Turner Diaries was the name of the book that Timothy McVeigh got his inspiration from.
Upton Sinclair, who wrote the Jungle, was a working for a socialist communist magazine. He wrote that as an article for them. Like, it wasn't like written as a book. Like it was all fabricated. Like, he didn't actually go and do any of these things and didn't do any of this research. It was just like an anti, worker, anti corporation pamphlet.
It's important literature.
Yeah, it's propaganda. It's anti-capitalist propaganda, essentially. And so
it's probably the only exposure to anti-capitalist ideas that American children get until they get to college.
I mean, I don't really agree with that at all. Like, so like you're way more likely to read The Jungle than you are like any Milton Friedman books in high school.
as it should be.
And no time is
you want sold. you want kids reading King Keynesian Milton Friedman.
He's not Keynesian. He's
I don't know. I've never read a Milton Friedman book, and I never will. So
that's surprising. But yeah, like Capitalism, Friedman, and Freedom is one of his books, and Free to Choose is another one he wrote. But like, there's tons of them, and they're super interesting. It depends. Like, they write academic and like for the general masses, different things. And I'm not even saying just them. Like, what about Murray Rothbard? Like Anatomy of the State. It's a short, you know, essay that a kid could eat. Read in, you know, a day. Sure. But like, that shit's not happening ever, and there's a reason for it too, because it's like the manufactured consent idea that Chomsky came up with. Like,
but do you love that kids are forced to read 1984 and Animal Farm?
I mean I didn't have to. Did you?
Yeah, I had to read both, and they're good, you know, they're fine or whatever. I have been, you know, I do like, I wonder your thoughts on this. Are you ever, and I'm sure you're annoyed by, you know, people conflate the liberty idea with, you know, the true disgusting fringes of the alt-right, right? Like those should be differentiated ideas. Like, you know, to me, there is such a difference between fascist communism, which is the only thing that's ever existed, and like the actual base human principles from an economic perspective of communism and socialism. And I don't have my hammer and sickle out. Like I don't,
yeah,
you know, I'm undecided on all of these things. There are some parts of communism and socialism that really appeal to me. There are parts of Mises economics that really appeal to me, but it is just kind of one of those interesting things that the only way communism has ever been implemented is through fascism, which I think everyone can just agree is bad. Like I just, who's making the argument for fascism?
I mean, I'll make it. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you and I are both on the record as saying the best right. form of government is a benevolent dictatorship.
Yeah. 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 My joke is I'm a anarchist in the classroom and a monarchist in the bedroom. So, I think it's, you know, Murray Rothbard like views history as the struggle between liberty and power. And so that's kind of like, we said on the last podcast, like, I don't think, you know, the real communism's never been tried meme or whatever is like, yeah, but it also would never,
there's no, I don't think there will ever be a real world application of communism that's ever done in a way that makes anyone's life better.
Right. And this is what Mises' treatise was on, like his earlier one. But I lost my train of thought there. Sorry. Oh, Murray Rothbard, right? Power versus liberty. And so like, if you view, as long as, so like George Orwell, we just talked about, he was a commie too, but he was a good one. You know, Chomsky was too.
I wanted to bring up Orwell because I just listened to a really interesting podcast about him where a guy wrote a book about him, was talking about how actually he was a real leftist, but he hated fascist leftists, yeah. Right? Which is where 1984 was born out of, was basically him like subtweeting his party members, basically being like, you guys don't get what this is really supposed to be about.
Exactly. And so like, this is kind of, I think, getting at the crux of what you are getting at is like, it, okay, do you believe that like an individual should be free to go and choose where they want to live? Right. And live under the, and live with like-minded people and under the government or no government.
Totally.
So like after that, it doesn't matter, right? So you are on the side of liberty if that is truly what you believe.
I have said this on this podcast many times, that there are many things that me and the Liberty Bros would agree on, and there are many things that they would pull their freedom guns out on me for, right? Right?
And this is why, like, then you would live in your whatever communist commune if you wanted, or, you know, some sort of social democrat area or something.
Well,
like that.
So you know, that's another point. We don't talk about this enough, that like, in my opinion, you will probably disagree with this, governments and centralized decision making is not, you would disagree with the idea that it's not immoral. I don't think it's immoral at all. But it's going to function better the smaller the group that you're governing is, and the greater the group, the more people in charge, the more different types of people you're trying to represent, the worse and less effective it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but yes, I would probably generally agree with that. But also, like, the less control you as an individual have on it. So like you can consider like a homeowners association, a small government, right? Like, but if you live in like a three flat brownstone here in Chicago, like you have quite a bit of control, right, in that form of government. But if you live in the city of Chicago, your vote is essentially worthless, right? And if you live in the United States of America, you're not going to move the needle at all in any federal election, essentially. Like there's like a few states where like it could matter slightly, but even then it's just like a roll of the dice whether your vote even matters at all. So the smaller it is, the more influence the individual has.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I generally agree with that.
You know, the power versus liberty angle, like, I mean, I think that's all there really is into it. And so back to your, like, the Liberty Bros thing is, yeah, people obviously look at Liberty Bros with bad faith intentions, and then they give them these, you know, bullshit ideas that they don't even subscribe to, and then mix everyone together. Like, that's just how it works now. Everyone's a racist, everyone's a sexist, everyone's, you know, everyone's far right, everyone's alt right, whatever, or everyone's a commie, right? Like, which I do, you know.
Yeah the which is like, which is even bad faither than bad faith. Like the idea that the Democratic Party isn't anything is in any way relation to like a leftist ideal is nothing but bad faith. There's been one piece of leftist legislation passed in the United States in the last 20 years, and it was a joke and disemboweled within months.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, like for your version of it, but it is like for what you specifically want, Davis. Like, of course, they're not doing that. But like over the overarching last 120 years of American history, I'd say, I don't know, it's pretty common.
We've had some good leftist legislation passed in this country in the past. You know, Do you enjoy driving on roads?
Yeah, that's
Do you enjoy having pasteurized milk?
That's not communist though. Like the government doesn't build the roads; the private companies do, and it's just a completely captured. If you know anything about like the road system, which I know very little because I didn't work in that for those agencies, but I do know people who did and other construction guys. It's a complete racket. Like all the whole bidding process is like completely captured. The same companies get the bids. You know, what road, if you live in a major city, the roads are fucking garbage. You get flat tires all the time and they're completely unsafe. They put these weird like cutoff roads where you have to like go into oncoming traffic. They don't care about your safety. And if you compared it to like Walmart or some, you know, gigantic shitty corporation, they do their construction generally at night, right? Because they actually need to make you happy as a customer. Like my buddy redid a whole Walmart. He's like a project manager and he had to get up at, you know, midnight to go work for months to finish the project. But but in a highway, they don't even take the cones down for the weekend when they're not going to be there. They'll let you sit in fucking traffic on July 4th.
It's so tilting.
Right. So like that's the government. The government's the bad problem. The government causes that. It's all completely captured. Like the idea that this is like, here's how far people get. This is the general idea people have with government. Like they'll just pass a law. Oh, the bad problem. Okay, just pass a law. Yeah. Well, that'll stop it. Right. That's as far as they get. But eventually that has nothing to do with it. And every sector gets completely captured, especially, and you know this, if you're an expert in the field and you just turn the page, the Gelman and Nagy effect, and when you don't know something about it, like the roads, you go, hey,
That was a pretty red pilling thing of me when you told me about this. Like the more that Gelman amnesia thing has sunk in, the more I've been like, wow, it's really insane how much that does impact our lives.
Because you don't know shit about viruses or the road or anything like this. So you just go, of course these institutions are doing the right thing. Why wouldn't they? You know, and like, okay, what schools did you go to? Oh, the ones by the institution. Yeah, right. Oh, okay. Well, that might affect your opinion, right? Like Tom Wood's analogy is like, imagine if Walmart ran the schools and you had to pledge allegiance to Walmart every day. And the teachers were all hired by Walmart. What ideology do you think they teach you? And then on the walls, there's you know, the first CEO of Walmart and the second CEO of Walmart, and we make up lies about them. Like, the first CEO never told a lie, right? Like, what would your opinion be of Walmart? And it also, back to your question of like you said, you think governments are, you know, it is moral, it's okay. It's like, it's not only is it not moral, it's an illusion. Their authority is an illusion. Just because if Walmart had an election and their board of directors was like their Congress and their CEO is the president, and they go, okay, we just had an election, this is the people in charge, we're gonna bomb Canada.
Right.
What? You can't do it. No, we had an election. We have a bunch of property. We can do that. It's like, make just because 6 out of 10 people say something, this is completely anti-liberal. Just because the majority wants to oppress a minority doesn't make it any moral,
right.
Doesn't make it legitimate. So like right off the bat, the whole thing's illegitimate. It doesn't make any, you know, no one agreed to this. It was agreed to by guys who are long dead. And most of these laws are passed by guys who are long dead, right?
Yes. So like, yeah, that's true.
No binding contract would bind for your kids too, right? Like, you know, we would laugh at that. And so like every institution from the civil court system, which we talked about before, which is so poorly run that you could ask yourself, do you know you or know anyone who's ever used a civil court system to successfully sue a former employer, or a contract went bad, or somebody ripped you off when you bought a boat off of them or something? And the answer is generally no, zero, right? And the median's probably like 0.5.
Sure.
And so what does that do? What does that lead to? It leads to all of us fucking hating our employers and businesses and feeling powerless. And so then who we do? We need more votes. We need more laws. We need to pass more laws. These guys are evil, right? But like, if you do the counterfactual thought experiment and say, okay, Davis, there was no court system, what would people be clamoring for? This giant piece of shit we got, right? This giant piece of shit we have. So like, I mean, and these are the most important functions that even minarchists would agree with should exist. Court systems, police and the armed forces. But like, is anyone happy with any of these institutions? And those are the most important ones. Now think about like these shitty little ones you guys don't know anything about, like the unemployment agencies and the treasurer's office and the comptroller, and what are they all?
Right.
Doing? No fucking clue. You can't name one state senator, much less one law that guy is trying to get passed, right? They do all this stuff. I work there. So like what happens is these laws are passed 100 years ago. And you have no idea what goes on. And it's usually negotiation between like the union and big business. And then they agree to it. And the legislature just passes it. And what they're trying to do is siphon off competition, generally speaking, for their own benefit. And they usually use it in the guise of helping you or other people. So like one law that was passed when I was there was for staffing companies in Illinois, they now have to provide an identification bond of like $1 million or $5 million or something, just in case they go into business, so that they can pay the employees. And you would be, as a liberal, you would go, okay, that's good. I think if someone's company goes under as a staffing company, you should get paid. That makes sense. That should be a fine or something, right? But that's not why they passed it. The labor wanted it. The labor unions wanted it, because they don't want staffing companies coming up and providing cheaper wages than the fair share wages that laws that we have. Whenever you hire a union company or a government project, you have to pay a certain minimum. So they're just trying, it doesn't matter. Like at all these, like the labor institutions as well, like they're not there for labor. They're not there for workers like they claim. They're there for themselves.
You're saying that unions only exist to benefit the union itself.
It's one of Conquest's three laws. All bureaucracies will eventually be run by people who benefit the bureaucracy instead of the goals that it originated for. And the longer it exists, the more it'll happen like that. And you could think of like the teachers union, you know, like they're not benefiting students, right? Like they're not benefiting the school system. They're benefiting teachers and the CIA and the FBI, all of them, the entire military industrial complex. They're not here to keep the peace, right? Or, keep Americans alive.
Sure. That I totally agree with. You absolutely have. I totally agree in the military industrial complex. So actually, I don't think I've ever asked you this before. Where, in your opinion, do you think it all went wrong? Do you think it's just always been this way? There's never been a good government in human history.
No, I mean, I think there's just varying degrees of good and bad.
Sure.
Yeah. It depends on the incentives and consequences. So like in the accountability, and right now, all these institutions. So it's just like another thing I wanted to tell you too, is like, don't get mad at people without power. Like there's no point in being angry with like a Trump supporter or a Bernie bro or something like that. Like these people have no power. Well, you got to point your finger at the institutions and entities and people that have power without consequences, right? And not fleeting power like an individual can have. Like I could go get, you know, a weapon and go do some damage, right? But eventually I'm going to get shot or arrested or something. And that's it. That's ball game for me, right? Like these institutions of like, you know, gigantic corporations, government and their allies in there, certain media conglomerates, certain like academic institutions or policy making institutions, right? Like they, you know, if like the easy examples, like you could say like there's weapons of mass destruction in a country, invade it, occupy it for 20 years on a lie that was not true at all. And then does anyone even resign in disgrace? Right?
Of course not.
Of course not. Right? Like they don't even have the dignity to fucking resign. Which, you know, obviously for war crimes, you should be a lot worse than just resigning, but like can't even get to that level, right? And it's because they're all allies, right? And so they're just trading power without consequences to keep each other in their elite situation. And so the government is just facilitating that. I mean, so this is what I was going to say about like the Liberty Bro community. The problem with like what's going on in the Liberty community is like, okay, we recognize that voluntarism is probably the most moral system to live under and the most beneficial to humanity. It's not perfect. There will still be poor people, but it's just the trade-offs are way more better under voluntarism. But you can never take over under a voluntarist like mindset. Right? Like eventually the people who want to win will beat the people who want to be left alone. Right? That's Aaron McIntyre's line. So like, yeah, you want liberty, you want voluntarism, you want whatever, even if you want to have your own communist compound, well, you're never going to achieve it. So like that debate is going on in like the Liberty universe.
Right.
And it's an important one because like most of this, we always come to this is like, okay, how much is this is the classroom and how much is this is the bedroom, right? Like how much is this in your head and how much is like, okay, well, how can Davis achieve his goals of like healthcare for, you know, the people who need it or whatever your main, you know, if someone might be
whatever my bleeding heart, dumbass lib take of the week is.
Yeah, none of that stuff too. Here's the problem with like being a liberal, like I was for so long. This is like you get on your like righteous high ground. It's very easy to say like I want healthcare for all these people. It's like no shit. Like everyone wants these things. You're not brave, like at all.
Like I'm pretty brave.
I'm not you, Davis, and not former me either. I'm saying like the general person is like they make these claims that any reasonable person would agree with.
Yeah, it's every time anyone does polling, Democratic or left-leaning positions always have the greatest amount of support.
Right, because there are these general questions of, do you like, do you want good things to happen to good people? It's like, yes, right? But like, okay, well, what are the trade-offs for achieving that? And the trade-offs are drastic in most situations and or unachievable to have your goal or have your goal last for any amount of time. So like, it's just like, yeah, I want good things to happen to good people. It's like, yeah, no shit. You know, like
how brave.
Yeah. How brave, like no fucking shit. And then you go like, well, and then you go like, and here's today's discourse is like, it's all bad faith. Right. And you're like, well, you know, I don't think the trade-offs are worth it because X, Y, Z. And it's like, okay, well, you love Trump. you're a Trump supporter and, or you're alt-right or whatever, you know, ist. And it's like, okay, well, that like I told
you. I think you're letting your Liberty Bros off a little bit easy in this regard, which is a lot of them saw Trump as a lever to bring it back to DFS. A lot of them knew what Trump was, knew what was going to happen, knew what the ramifications were going to be, but used this fucking moron who was just willing to say whatever people were saying to him as a lever. And I don't think that those bros should be held unculpable with that. I think your idea of not getting mad at people in power in that aspect is wrong. And I think that those people should be held accountable for using Trump as their lever.
Well, I think a lot of the Liberty Bros didn't even vote for him. So like, but like, I mean, and let me agree with you. I think a lot of them did want him to win as like a hand grenade, you know?
Yes.
Throw a hand grenade.
Right. Exactly. And I think letting them off the hook for that is because I think it would be very easy to be like, oh, well, what did you want them to do? You know, not vote or vote for Hill Dog for the good of the country. Like those are like, you know, uneven trade-offs. But the idea that because the Liberty Bros were using Trump as a means to a much more important end, I think is totally bullshit.
I mean, so like, I agree with you, like to some extent there, but I still don't think they have any power. Like, I don't think they have any power to change anything. Like I'm talking just regular everyday Liberty Bros. Like let's even say some conservatives too. We'll throw them all in there. Like, what power do they really hold? Like, oh, like it's kind of like if you want like the Yankees to lose, like does that mean I have power? And then the Yankees lose and I take pleasure in it?
No, but I mean, what I mean is just like, cause we're talking about this in a classroom sense. So I mean, in a classroom sense, the Liberty Bros from a classroom sense, and like, cause they're arguing this philosophically, right? That a vote for Trump is a vote for, you know, a breaking down of the American power structure and potentially an ability to regenerate or whatever. And I think even in a classroom sense, you can say that's immoral because like we fucking knew, everyone with a brain knew what was going to happen when Trump became president, and it was bad. And again, red meat eaters listening to this, I'm not saying like a vote for Joe Biden is a vote for saving America's Democratic Republic. Like I'm not saying that shit either. Like I'm not, don't paint me as a fucking Joe Biden slurper, but it's like, you know, everything we always talk about, you know, there are all these trade-offs, and the trade-offs for voting for Trump were bad trade-offs.
I mean, what were the trade? Nothing happened. Like what? I mean, he didn't change anything. Everything ran the same way. He was like, he was one of the most feckle presidents ever. He didn't do shit.
I more mean from like an ideological tenor in the United States.
Yeah. But Trump is just the, you know, the end result of all the symptoms and things that came before him. And by the way, like, you know, Michael Malice has a line, you know, Trump, they thought Trump was, you know, the flood, but he was actually the dam. So like, there could be way more coming that you won't like.
Oh, there will be. There will be.
Yeah. And it's not Trump, and it's not whoever's next either. It's a culture war. We're in a cold civil war.
Yeah.
And who knows what's going to happen, but that's not from Trump saying bigoted shit for 6 months, right? It's from hundreds of years of boiling up conflict that's really culminated with the internet, I think. And like I said last time, like people know, like conservatives know you hate them. not you, Davis, but liberals, they know now. And you're an idiot for going like, why won't you eat this apple? It's good for you. It's like, cause they won't eat things. You know, they won't take things from people they know hate them. Right. They're not going to vote for things that people that hate them, which is why I think like a peaceful divorce is and let people sort themselves out in these smaller communities where they have more control would be beneficial if we could pull it off. I mean, I'm not optimistic. That's just one of a million different ways, you know, we could do it. But
while we're talking about a peaceful divorce, the fucking Bitcoin bros are losing me, man. They're every day it gets worse, dude. These people are fucking losing their minds. The big, like, do you know who Peter McCormick is? He's been on this show. He does What Bitcoin Did, which is probably the biggest Bitcoin podcast. And they're now the Bitcoin people are trying to cancel him.
Really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to get him uninvited from some of these Bitcoin conferences and stuff because, because he's vaccinated, but just so they just say all this ridiculous shit about him. He had Udi Wertheimer on his show, and I think Udi very rightfully, criticizes the Bitcoin community. Like, we want everyone to use fucking Bitcoin, and we can't convince OpenSea to take Bitcoin. Kind of showing the emperor that they have no clothes. And man, they're just, it's fucking hard to know that this thing that I've loved for so long is turning into this very gross, toxic community. I mean, the Bitcoin people, I get why people hate Bitcoin people. I totally get it.
Yeah. But I mean, these are two different things, Bitcoin and the Bitcoin people, right?
For sure. And that's what a real Bitcoiner would say. Bitcoin has no community. You know, it has no political opinion. It is an immutable ledger, and that's all that it is.
Right, exactly. And like our end goal of, you know, getting rid of the banking system and the duopoly of Visa, MasterCard, getting banks to the bankless, you know, that type of thing can all still happen with, you know, some Bitcoin bros, you know, going off the handle.
Sure.
Yeah, I was thinking with this inflation stuff, Davis, this is kind of corollary to Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So like Bitcoin bro, you know, philosophy, libertarian philosophy, whatever, is, you know, the Fed is printing this money and they've been going ham since 2008, which is causing all this inflation, essentially more dollars chasing fewer or the same amount of products and fewer. And because of the supply chain issues, which you would think would be resolved by now. But so inflation's up. Like,
yeah.
What, and you see these inflation charts, right? Like there's one going around today, which has gone around a lot, where it shows like subsidized industry versus non-subsidized industry. So like schools, hospital bills, college textbooks, et cetera, just skyrocketed in the last 12 years for cost. And so a subsidy is essentially the same thing as the Fed printing, right? It increases the demand and the amount of money, especially if you're giving free interest rates or low interest rates for housing, for example, and it raises the price. Now, the Fed says that inflation's good, right? They want to keep it around 2-some%. But there's like two things there. Like one is like, first of all, there's this like unseen inflation where if it's the same price over time, that doesn't mean inflation didn't happen there. Right. So like, let's just say like TVs, we know TVs drop in price, but let's say they didn't, like there's so much money printing that even TVs were the same price for the last 12 years. Well, yeah. They would count that as zero. They would count that as zero. Right. It's like, but it's not zero. You're still fucking with our TVs too, even. So there's that. And then there's the Fed says they want 2%, 2% inflation, because if people are saving so much, like, yeah, it's more investment into capital goods, which is good production, which is what we need right now. But then also people are less likely to spend. So a little bit of inflation is a good thing, right? But like from a, you know, not our mindset, but the general population mindset, like, okay, well, where's the fucking democracy in that? Like, let's even grant that 2% inflation is good. Who's this? Like, why do they get to decide this? They're, you know, a quote unquote private banking conglomerate, the Fed bank system, maybe we want minus 2%. Maybe we want deflationary thing where prices go down. Why would you get to decide that? Now, who, after all these institutions are doing, especially in the last decade, most people have lost faith in them. Where do they get, you know, the authority to even decide that, even if it's probably like generally agreed upon that 2% inflation should do it? You know, do you have any thoughts on that? Like, I've just been thinking about that the past few days.
Well, you know, a fiat bro, a Keynesian or whatever, or someone who, you know, really likes civics or whatever, they would say you are giving consent by voting for these folks, that just by the nature of voting these people into office, you are
at the Fed bank.
Right. But they would say, you know, the president and the treasurer and all this, they have say in who runs the Fed bank and all that shit.
That's true. But then that's also counter to the narrative that they themselves put forth, which is this is a private institution. Right. So like then there's a lot of double talk or someone here is lying.
I'm not saying it makes sense. It's total double talk. I'm just telling you what the counter argument is.
Yeah. But well, anyways, the long story short is like, wouldn't it be nice to try maybe like stop printing money? Let's see what negative inflation does to our economy. You know, it's never going to happen. But like, what's your guess on these prices? Let's say for the next year, does inflation taper off?
Down.
Does it stay flat? Does it go up?
Down.
Starting now, you think? Like the next?
Yeah, quarter, because if anything, the federal government will implement price controls because the narrative has gotten so out of control.
Price controls won't do anything. I mean, the price controls have been tried in multiple countries, and yeah, it never lowers prices, and the money will be spent elsewhere because it'll just the investor will just reallocate the capital goods. So, like, sure. If you say we're going to do price controls on housing, I'm not going to invest in housing anymore because there's no profit in it. So then housing will actually go up. It'll either go up or the property won't be taken care of for like people like with rent control. Right. It's like, well, if I can't charge more, I'm not going to provide good service to my customer. It gives a shit. Like these type of things happen. Like if you wanted prices to go down, you'd do the exact opposite. You would have price controls on everything except the industry you want to lower prices in, because then all the capital goods would funnel into that industry. Right. Because like, oh, I can't make money in whatever. I don't know, pharmaceuticals now because there's price controls. So I'll funnel it all into housing because there's no cap. There's no regulation anymore. And then competition will happen. Prices would drop significantly.
So it doesn't matter
one way or another. One way or another, the resources are going to get reallocated. Like you can't centrally plan all this stuff. Central planning is one of the giant failures of the 19th century, 20th century. You can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I probably. Well, I don't know if I buy that or not. I don't know enough to say definitively one way or the other, but I do know that the number one edict of the Fed and central bankers all across the world has got to be limiting inflation, because they don't do these big countries do not want riots on the streets like it's fucking Sri Lanka, right? Like we can't have that, you know.
That shit's increasing too. I mean, it's not just Sri Lanka. Italy is having riots. Denmark, Brazil, I think if you sub to the right people on Twitter, you'll see all these riots all over the world, which is not they're not broadcasting them on mainstream publications, which I don't know. I feel that's a lot of the stuff they do is irresponsible, but like it can't be a good sign being that, you know, the wealthiest country on the planet with all these, you know, I don't know if third world or second world or whatever countries are rioting and collapsing. Like that shit's eventually going to come here. And we already have supply chain issues, shortages on the shelf, hyper, you know, almost hyperinflation or just high inflation right now, whatever you want to call it. Not good signs.
No, no. And the fucking Bitcoin people can't get their shit together enough to.
The thing that pisses me off about Bitcoin is like the thesis. Okay. It's like that. When me and Pete bought that Jokic Cosmic, we bought Jokic Cosmic. He won the MVP fucking twice in a row. And it's worth less than what we paid for it.
Yeah.
Right. Like so the thesis of the play goes perfectly and you're getting
75%
of your money back currently.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what pisses me off about Bitcoin right now is
the Bitcoin people don't acknowledge this at all. You know, they'll be like, oh, you know, everyone got wiped out on Celsius or Luna and you should have never left your keys and BlockFi or whatever. And I can't believe these stupid ETH people with their JPEGs, what morons, and just completely ignoring the fact that, you know, someone who started dollar cost averaging in 2021 is so far underwater right now.
And it's the thesis of the play is right fucking now that we should be skyrocketing, right? I think we're being fair. Now, here's another thing they say, Davis, too. It's like, okay, yeah, but like, Brian, when did you start investing, right? It's like, yeah, okay, so I was early and I got lucky, but like, I'm not sure. Getting lucky
is not a fucking game plan, though. Like, sure, I got lucky, but getting lucky shouldn't be required as part of a savings vehicle.
Well, and also was the thesis of the play priced in then in 2018, 2019, that's when the payoff was. So we did beat inflation kind of like, I mean, there is some validity to that argument, but it just pisses me off just seeing. So like now we're at 21 last I looked, like I still have to look every day. I can't help it. And like, we were just at what, 25 or something. And like, so it's like, and the fear and the panic in the banking system, I'm sure you saw China rolled in tanks because their banks can't pay out and they're using, and they just said, we're claiming your funds. It's investment for the state. Like, so like just all across the world, everything that Bitcoiners said would happen that would increase the price of Bitcoin has happened. And we've gone from 60 to 20. Like that's the reality of it. And so like, it's like, I can't believe we got the fucking thesis right again. The prices went down.
And we just need another lifetime to realize our EV.
Yeah. I mean, if it goes down to like 15 or something, let's say it stays at 20 for 2-3 years. Well, then the thesis was bullshit. Like at what point really would we have to be like, well, I mean, a decade, 2 decades.
I mean, we got
everything's happening that was supposed to happen.
Well, except for we got to once banks or nation states get involved in purchasing Bitcoin, that's like the new thesis, right? Is that eventually nation states and banks are going to want to own Bitcoin the same way they did with gold?
I mean, but that's not the original thesis, right?
Like, well, the original thesis was peer-to-peer digital cash, and that they abandoned that 5 years ago, right? No one talks about this ever anymore. No one cares about that.
Yeah, that's true. But it certainly wasn't. Oh, and then eventually, we need the states to come in and buy a bunch to drive up the price. Which, by the way, you don't think that's going to come with regulation in a lot of these countries, like harsh regulation, which does matter. It does. Like, I know Bitcoin and the internet, you can't shut down. I know, I get it. But like, if you make it, you know, 20 years in prison to use Bitcoin or use it in a way they don't like a lot of people are going to not use it. Right? It's going to stop adoption. They're going to eventually use it the way they want. Like, I don't know. That's the thing. And then with ETH too, it's like, okay, is 2.0, why did the price go up? I thought like, is 2.0 coming earlier than people thought? Like, why the fuck did that go up 50%?
Yeah, it was like rumors of the merge actually happening is basically what it was. As a Liberty bro, there are a lot of things about ETH. I think if you read this book, The Cryptopians, you'd be like, I don't know if I want to own that much ETH. Kind of sounds like fiat to me, bro.
I think you're right. But like, I mean, being a Liberty bro doesn't mean that you don't, you know, believe
want to make money.
No, not just that, but like you could easily like say like, oh, this guy is a harsh CEO, but I like the way he runs his company. I want to work for him. I want to buy his products or something like that. Like, it doesn't mean, you know, cause that's kind of what the thing is with Vitalik, right? He's like, he kind of holds the cards. He could really screw people over.
Yeah.
That like, just because you don't want the federal government, you know, printing trillions of dollars doesn't necessarily mean you're not okay with other investing in other institutions or working for them or something like that. It's not anti-libertarian, like just full stop.
I don't think it is either, but well, that's a conversation for another day. We can return to this in a month or two. Yeah. I got to get out of here. I got a hard out. Guys, check out Brick's Draft Caddy. It's pretty cool. Gonna help you realize that EV in this lifetime instead of another. Watch Lulz on Wednesday nights, and I'll be back next week.
All right.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.